From listener-supported KTOO, welcome to Juno Afternoon, broadcasting live from the homelands of the Occoquan and on demand as a podcast. It's Thursday, June 20th, 2024. Happy summer solstice. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. Gonna chi shawa tuaksuk nusum salama. Thank you for joining the conversation today. On the show, Juno's Ghostlight Theater presents two performances of mixed cast this Saturday night. We'll have a preview. The Fool's Run is back with a new name and time. It's Friday night, June 21st. We'll chat with the organizers of this reboot of a Juno classic. We'll learn about the NOAA Large Whale Entanglement Program and how the community can safely and legally assist. And we'll check in with the Juno Police Department. Those conversations, plus garden talk and more, coming up this hour on Juno Afternoon.
Support from Hanson Gress. Seeking curious people who like technology, network engineering, and customer support. Opportunities for those who thrive on problem solving. Details at hansongress.com/careers.
KTOO is raising membership funds in support of all the programming you depend on. If you have the capacity to give this June, we invite you to sign on as a new member or make an additional gift. All funds raised directly support the important work of keeping you informed, entertained, and connected. Give at ktoo.org. Couple of quick announcements before we begin today. Due to unforeseen circumstances, Theatre Alaska's Pride and Prejudice will now begin performances this Saturday, June 22nd. There will be no shows tonight or tomorrow night. For more info and updates, follow Theatre Alaska on socials or visit theatrealaska.org. That's theatre with an E-R, alaska.org. And tonight, Thursday, June 20th at 7 p.m., join poet Sarah Aronson and essayist Karina Cook for Contour Lines, a reading. It's an hour of live literature presented at Kunik Hidi Northern Light United Church at 7 p.m. tonight. Sarah Aronson is a Montana-based poet who's originally from Juneau. She's in town this month as an artist in residence with the Alaska State Parks. And Karina Cook is a Juneau-based essayist. She teaches nonfiction in Alaska Pacific University's Creative Writing MFA program. They'll share the mic to talk about new projects and to dig into things like land and history and art, and there will be poetry, and there will also be some prose. Conversation and chit-chat will follow. And they say a fun fact is a little bit of literature prepares you for solstice like none other. Again, that's Sarah Aronson and Karina Cook reading tonight at Kunik Hidi Northern Light United Church at 7 p.m. This is Juno Afternoon, your listener-supported community program on KTOO at 104.3 Juno, 91.7 Juno Auk Bay, and online at ktoo.org. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. And this Saturday night, Juno Ghostlight Theater presents Mix Cast, a gender-bent, stereotype-defying night of musical theater. And here to share more about it are Skiba Wati and Wendy Burns. Gunath Chish, Haye Adi, thank you so much for being here today. It's a pleasure to have you in the studio. Wasa Iati, how's it going?
It's great. Good.
Thanks for having us, Boston.
Rehearsals in progress.
We have one tonight. Yeah.
Nice.
Rehearsal is a strong word. We actually don't rehearse a whole heck of a lot for this production. That's part of the charm. So we typically do one rehearsal per performer before the production on Saturday. And tonight we are doing a little group rehearsal, the one and only before the actual production. So there's definitely a bit of whimsy and charm and improv included in Saturday's show, which makes it fun.
Well, let's first start by defining. A lot of people may know Juno Ghostlight Theater for the different productions they've done in Mixed Cast. This is like the third or fourth one of these. So what is Mixed Cast?
Basically, what it boils down to is the premise of Mixed Cast is that we ask our singers to select a number by a character that they would never be typecast to play in a show. For example, in this mixed cast, I'm going to be, my solo number that I'm going to be singing is an older British gentleman, which is not something that I would traditionally ever get an opportunity to play. Mm-hmm. You can put your number in whatever key that you want. And it's a really cool time to kind of like break down boundaries that exist within theater and be able to explore a type of role that you wouldn't usually have any opportunity to explore. So,
oh, that's kind of cool.
Yeah, it's a really cool kind of twist on what you often would see at some other type of musical theater show. Case.
So it gives everybody the opportunity to sing the songs they love that maybe they'd never actually get to do in a production, unless somebody was maybe thinking a little outside the box, which does happen a little bit more
of
these
course.
Days, which is kind of cool. So, all right. Well, so who's in the production? We want to know that.
Great question.
I think both of you probably.
We are both singing. Yes. Singing independently. We're also singing a couple numbers together. Our MC for the evening is going to be Kelsey Bryce Riker.
Surprise, surprise.
And then singing, we also have Kate Ross, Rio Alberto, Stephen Ahrens, Dane Moorhead, Stacey Katas, Tim Sislow, Jack Schultz, and then a little guest feature by Juno's own Salisa.
Awesome. And is there somebody doing the musical accompaniment?
Rob Cohen.
Rob Cohen, as per usual.
Tried and true.
Right. Yeah. Excellent. Excellent. So give us an example of maybe some of the, you mentioned one of the songs that you're doing, but give us an example of some of the other songs that we might hear.
Absolutely. Well, you led into our little talk here with All I Care About Is Love from Chicago the Musical. Mm-hmm. That's going to be one of our opening numbers. And that is going to be actually performed by Kelsey and the entire cast. And we have a couple of little lyric changes in there as well, just to make that extra fun. A couple other group numbers we have are from Les Mis and also from Hamilton.
Nice.
And also Legally Blonde, the musical. Yeah. And so quite a variety of group numbers for sure. Multiple duets. I'm doing a duet with Salisa from Beauty and the Beast.
Oh,
so
which one are you doing?
You'll have to come.
That's a surprise. I'll just say I'm playing Salisa's sidekick.
Oh, I see. Okay. Yeah, we don't want to give everything away, I guess.
But keep the mystery alive.
That's really cool. Now I know that there are two shows on Saturday. Give us the details of the shows.
We got a 7 p.m. show. We got a 10 p.m. show. It will be more or less the same show. It's whatever audience we get for both that'll make it a really unique or special experience. And we do have a few tricks up our sleeve to kind of engage the audiences that we have at our two different productions and kind of make it a little bit more of an immersive experience.
Intriguing.
Intriguing. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Trying to lead with just the correct amount of a mystery to draw you in. But it'll be, you know, bar will be open. Sit down. We'll sing at you for a while. We'll have a brief intermission. We'll sing at you and with you some more. There will be some opportunities if the audience would like to join us in song and sing along where they are encouraged, but not required to do so. I think it will be a mixture of a really like fun and silly comical time, lots of laughs, also with some like really tenderhearted moments mixed into the narrative of the show.
Yeah. And where's it happening?
Crystal Saloon.
Crystal Saloon on that cool stage that they have.
Yes.
And I know you can go to mixcastjune.eventbrite.com to pick up a ticket. And you have a couple different ticket levels. You have a general admission and then also a VIP, which I'm assuming means the VIP is you get one of the tables or
correct.
Something. You don't have to stand up the whole time if you don't want to.
Yep.
And 7 and 10 o'clock.
Yes.
I love that there's, because you were talking about how there's like individual performances and everybody picks the song that they want to do, but then you incorporate sort of group stuff in there too, like duos and whole company numbers, which is interesting. So is that what you'll be figuring out tonight, basically, is getting those group numbers all figured out and where people enter and exit from and all that good stuff?
Not the entrances and exits necessarily, but tonight we'll be going over the music portion of that. So giving everyone a chance to sing through it with Rob.
Nice.
And then the staging of it actually typically will happen Saturday before the show. We'll get there a little bit early, figure out the staging and go from there. So we might do like a talk through of it tonight, you know, like this is what it might look like, but really hands-on on Saturday.
But it's kind of like, it's like a cabaret, right? So there's not like a bunch of staging. It's mostly going to be singing and
it's definitely kind of, singing, but I mean, people are going to be in character. All the music is memorized, so no one's going to be up there reading sheet music or anything like that. Everything's memorized. There's a couple bits of dialogue mixed into some of the songs as well, just for added humor potentially, and also just to kind of get the vibe going of that production that that song is from.
Well, with Kelsey Bryce Riker as your MC, that always, you know, keeps the show moving for sure, and keeps the audience engagement at a high. And Skiba, what is the importance of doing this type of work, sort of in this sort of mixed cast kind of thing? Why do we do this?
Why do we do this? Well, we do it because we love it. I know I speak for myself when I say that, but I think the message that mixed cast gives out to the community as a whole is kind of what we mentioned, just this ability that we can bridge these societal gaps. We can bridge these norms that are kind of pushed upon us in theater, but also in society. It's a very judge-free, completely non-judgmental, safe zone for everyone. That's part of our mission in general. We're a very inclusive theater. We want all members of the community to be involved and to know that they are welcome. And all the venues that we can put that word out in public and have that ability to just kind of, you know, preach freedom for humanity, right? Like, this is just like, live your best life, be yourself. And this is an opportunity for folks to do that.
And of course, have a little fun all at the same time.
100%. I would say that all of our performers love performing.
Yeah, absolutely. That's so cool. Well, it's mixed cast. It's Saturday night. It's at the Crystal Saloon. It's June 22nd. It's at 7 and 10 o'clock. You can get tickets at mixedcastjune.eventbrite.com, or you can go to junoghostlight.com, and there's a link to the tickets right there on the homepage. It's a variety of your favorite performers singing all kinds of songs that maybe they never get a chance to sing in a regular production, and that's what mixed cast is all about. Wendy, Skiba, thank you so much for coming in. Gunna Cheese for being here, and look forward to Saturday night. I'll be performing that night myself somewhere else in town, so I'm going to miss it, unfortunately. Maybe the 10 o'clock.
You could come to the 10 p.m.
I might be able to make it to the 10
Boston.
If I'm not passed out by then.
Well, fair enough.
We'll see. But Gunna Cheese for coming in. Thanks.
Absolutely.
So
thank
much.
You for having us.
Yeah. Up next, Noah's whale, large whale entanglement program, and what you need to know to get involved. But first, here's Sounds Wild on Juno Afternoon from KTOO.
Sounds Wild. Hi, I'm Riley Woodford for the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. On a summer morning, the forest is alive with the music of songbirds. With a little practice, it's possible to identify these singers. Robins and thrush, flycatchers, warblers, chickadees, and sparrows can all be picked out. To help, birders have assigned some phrases or mnemonic devices to identify bird songs and calls. Words that are said to the tune and speed of the bird call. The call of the American robin can be spoken as cheer-up, cheerio. The olive-sided flycatcher is another bird whose call is easier to remember with a phrase. Perched atop dead tree snags and coniferous areas, they announce their territory by calling out, quick, three beers. In the case of the chickadee, the name is reminiscent of the chickadee-dee song. It's helpful to make up your own phrases and reminders to help you identify birds by song and call. For me, the call of the varied thrush reminds me of my grade school gym teacher's whistle, the gym teacher bird. Both the bird and the whistle create two notes at the same time, a distinct buzzy whistle that carries well through the forest. For Sounds Wild, I'm Riley Woodford.
This is Juno Afternoon from your listener-supported public media station, KTO. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, is a U.S. government agency that provides weather, climate, ocean, and coastal science and services. And one of the programs that they have is the Large Whale Entanglement Response. And joining me now in the studio to talk about this is Sadie Wright, Alaska Regional Large Whale Entanglement Response Response Coordinator. That's quite a title, Sadie. And Ed Lyman, who has another large title, Regional Large Whale Entanglement Response Coordinator for the Hawaiian Islands Humpback Whale National Marine Sanctuary.
Fantastic.
Well, Gunnith Chishayadi, thank you so much for being here today. It's a pleasure to have you in the studio. And Wasaiti, how's it going?
Thanks for having us, Boston.
Yeah.
Likewise.
It's really, really great to have you here. So I, first of all, sort of want to know a little bit about your roles that you have at NOAA. I gave these large titles, but let's break it down a little bit, Sadie. Tell us a little bit about what you do.
Thanks. And thanks for the introduction of the NOAA program. It's a national program, and I coordinate our regional branch of that program, the Large Whale Entanglement Response Program here in Alaska. And Ed is an expert whale disentangler from the Hawaiian Islands Humpback Whale National Marine Sanctuary, who travels up to Alaska annually on detail to help prepare, train our response teams and help respond to entangled whales. We learn a lot from Ed.
So you have the local, that local coordinator, and you have a regional advisor that comes up and lends a hand.
And when you're here, Ed, are you based in Dutch Harbor? Is that because that's what it said in the notes, but that doesn't necessarily mean where you are all the time, right?
No, it's based here in Juneau.
Okay.
And hop around where the need is, where teams need to be trained, where we have the, you know, strategic, where whales might be being reported entangled, mm-hmm. and where you have the resources, the right people to come together and lend a hand along with the NOAA Fisheries Oversight.
I see. Okay. Yeah. So let's talk about what does it mean for a large whale to be entangled?
That's a good question. Basically, it's when they come in contact with any type of lines or gear or net or marine debris in the water, and it becomes attached to them in some way. A lot of whale entanglements, they're able to free themselves, and maybe that results in injuries, and you'll see scarring after the whale swims away. But sometimes they become so badly entangled or wrapped in gear that they can't get free by themselves. And that's where we have trained teams with specialized equipment who we authorize to go out and help cut that whale free from that gear.
So they're not necessarily... They could be stuck somewhere, but they also might be still in the water moving with the stuff on them.
Exactly, Boston. I mean, the impacts are there, but they're not typically immediate. So it is typically things like, you know, being restricted in your mobility. Therefore, well, if you're restricted enough, you may drown, right? You may not come to the surface the next time and take that next breath of air.
Right.
Or you might just not be able to feed. So over time, starvation. And over time can be months, if not a year. Because they carry a lot of blubber on them.
Yeah.
You can have systemic infections, you can have physical trauma, literally lines cutting into flesh. So those are some of the impacts that even a large whale, even a 40-ton whale can be,
Yeah, and I know this is called the Large Whale Entanglement Program, but I'm assuming there's some smaller whales that get a little entangled as well?
Absolutely. Most of the training and the specialized equipment that we used is designed for those larger whales, 25 foot plus. Mm. But if there was a smaller animal that was entangled, a smaller whale, cetacean, then I imagine we'd be the first phone number that folks would reach out to, and we'd use our equipment and training to figure out how to help that animal if possible.
Yeah. And how many, how often does this happen, I guess? How many whales are entangled each year?
Well, it's a worldwide threat.
Yeah.
And worldwide, there's estimates of mortality of,
right.
of hundreds of thousands of
right.
whales from entanglement. So it's a worldwide
wow.
threat. Here in Alaska, you know, we're very remote, so we can't see everything all of the time. But we're averaging about 10 to 15 confirmed entanglements reported annually.
Oh, wow.
So not super common, but we expect to hear about a dozen entangled whales annually here
in
Alaska.
They are big needles in a very big haystack.
Right.
So as good as the community, that on-water community is at trying to, you know, opportunistically they've stumbled across these animals and report to us, you know, that they found that animal, it's still scratching the surface. And Sadie mentioned this, the scars on the animals. Those rates are higher, but those are telling us who got entangled and got out of it on their own. So it's a lot of pieces of the puzzle. We don't have all the pieces.
Yeah.
Okay.
And is there, Ed, I guess, an environmental impact to the whales being entangled? Like, what happens if we weren't helping them to get unentangled?
It's a good point. There's a broader impact. We've been saying that yeah. It's not just about the animal, you know, that animal, but a broader biological, ecological, there's socioeconomical impacts, like, say, for fisheries or the tourist industry, per se, for some of these species. I know that's secondary, but still, they're there. Then there is the cultural impacts, maybe, to indigenous communities. These might have, these animals may be significant to them in some form or fashion, okay? Mm-hmm. And the list goes on, really. I mean, the list goes on. So it's a broad impact. Fishermen don't want to catch whales. When it is fishing gear, yeah. They take a hit, right? So the loss of gear, the risk to them, they might try to free the animal. There's risk there, damage to the boat, loss of catch, things like that. And again, I want to emphasize, it's not always fishing gear, but that was meant to be an example.
Right. Because there's all kinds of things that might be in the ocean or whatever that it could be entangling the whale. And I do want to give this number out because we're going to talk about this a little bit in terms of what people can do or what they should or shouldn't do, right, in terms of those ideas. But so if you do spot this and you need to call the hotline, it's 877-925-7773. Or if you're out on the water, you can hail the Coast Guard on channel 16 and they will relay that report. So if you're out there seeing something and you're on your boat, just call channel 16 and you can report the entangled large whale. And Sadie, you do sort of recommend that people don't necessarily try to even though you have that instinct as a person, absolutely, right? Like, oh, we can help them because, it's not just a little bitty net I see on them, but maybe it's something large. Like, yeah. Talk a little bit about that.
Absolutely. And there's two reasons that I'm really glad that you read off that phone number, because we are concerned about human safety with entangled whales. Some people might perceive them as a gentle giants or an animal that understands that we're trying to help disentangle them, but really what you have is a scared animal that's likely in pain and very stressed out. So while it might look like it's behaving calmly, when you start taking lines off these animals, they'll often thrash. They'll react very abruptly, very quickly. It's amazing how fast they can move and slash that tail. And so the equipment that our trained team is using is often hooked knives on the end of a 30-foot long pole. So we're using something that really puts our responders at a distance. So we want people to know that we've got trained responders who have equipment that can really help keep people safe. And we have underwater cameras and whatnot that allow us to assess the entanglement and make a determination about which line should be cut first, because sometimes if the wrong line is cut first, it could make the entanglement worse. Mm-hmm. So we're really counting on the public, on the Alaskan community and on-water community, to let us know, to report entangled whales, because we can't do that without them. We need to know the entangled whales are out there, where they're at, what direction they're headed. Photos taken from over 100 yards away are essential to us understanding if it's a life-threatening entanglement. Mm. So we're really counting on the public and the on-water community to let us know about the entanglements. But we want to caution against taking matters into your own hands. We really want folks to reach out to us and let us know what they're saying.
Yeah, I can imagine, like, you know, for a person who has maybe a domestic animal and it gets caught in something, you know how freaked out they can get. And just imagine that animal at 40 tons or whatever is, you know, to imagine like how big they would be reacting to that when your little cat could do you such damage, you know, at the same time. So that's the best way to do it. And I like what you said is to take some footage, right? You can take some footage if you're absolutely out there on your boat, or if you're on land and you happen to see something, and you can get a video of that and send that in, or you would be able to, once you call the number, which I want to give that number again, it's 877-925-7723, or you can hail the Coast Guard on channel 16. Is there somewhere online that people can find out more about this and the entanglement program and what else they might need to know?
Yes, and I would recommend doing a Google search for Alaska NOAA Large Whale Entanglement. Not only can you learn more about our program, but there's also a level one, an online level one training available. It's about an hour long where people can learn how to become a first responder. Basically, the types of information we're looking for to help us determine if an entanglement is life threatening for a whale.
Oh, wow.
So it's a 1 hour training that people can access on our webpage. Also, I'm just going to rattle off the phone number once more because I think I heard you transpose the last
two. Oh, I did. I'm sorry.
It's 877-925-7773 is our 24/7 hotline.
Yes, absolutely. And I'll put that on the webpage for this episode as well. And of course, yeah, I think Sadie said it right. Google it because it's probably one of those government websites with 5 million slashes in it. So that's all good. And Ed, you're based in Hawaii the rest of the year. Are you dealing with entanglement in Hawaii as well?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly, Boston. So I do the same thing down there along with the research. And that's a component here. That's why we call it entanglement response, not disentanglement. Because in addition to that information telling us, giving us an action plan, how to cut the whale free, we also are gaining information to reduce this threat for the animal and for everyone else that might be involved. Back to the point of this is a broad-based threat. So that information, that science is critical. So again, information lets you make good decisions across the board.
Is there something that, besides seeing it and reporting it, is there something we could be doing? Obviously not throwing our gear in the ocean, you know, that would be one thing. But is there other ways to, you know, sort of what should we be mindful of, I guess, in terms of our waste and all of that?
Yeah, thanks for bringing that up. That's a really good point. I think we could rattle off a few things that people can do. Getting your gear out of the water when it's not in use, like not storing lines in the water. And on your pot gear, using a leaded line, heavy sinking line instead of floating line helps reduce the threat to whales.
Yeah, reduce the scope on your buoy line. You know, I know you want extra scope to deal with, you know, maybe resetting it in deeper water or storm surge and things like that. But if just don't make it any longer than you need to, that's maybe it. You know, don't do what you don't need to do, what we need to do. So
right.
It helps make it more whale safe.
The excess makes it maybe a little bit dangerous.
Yeah.
Well, it's the Large Whale Entanglement Response Program from NOAA. You can, of course, search, as Sadie said, Google that, and you'll find out more information. I love the idea of taking an hour-long course so you can at least get a little, you know, especially if you're a person who's on the water a lot, it might be a really great thing to do. And you're all doing great work saving the whales, basically, right? Saving the whales, getting them unentangled. I think that's really great. Great. Is there anything else that we need to mention? Is there anything else? I think we got that. We'll mention the number one more time, but just making sure we get through all the notes there. I think we're good. Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks so much for having us, Boston.
Of course.
Helping us get the word out. And we really appreciate the phone calls from the public with the reports.
That's awesome. I'm going to give this number right. I'm going to do it right this time. 877-925-7773. That is the number. Or if you're on the water, you can call the Coast Guard on Channel 16 and they will relay the report to the NOAA Entanglement Program. So Sadie, Ed, thank you so much. Gunnar Cheese for being here. It was a pleasure.
Pleasure.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much. Okay. Up next, we'll check in with the Juneau Police Department and meet Matt Dubois, the newly promoted commander of special operations. But first, in this week's Garden Talk, KTOO's Chloe Plesnack talks with Joel Boss about companion planting. And for more Garden Talk, visit ktoo.org/gardentalk or subscribe to the podcast in your app of choice.
Hi, Joel. Thanks so much for joining me today.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Happy to be here.
So if you could just start with introducing yourself and how you got started in gardening.
Yeah, absolutely. My name is Joel Boss. I guess I started gardening many years ago in my dreams, and they seem like they're finally coming true lately. I'm here in North Douglas, and my family started a small farm. It's called Titlewood Food and Forage. And I'm working for Discovery Southeast here in Juneau, and it's an amazing organization, and they've been able to support me in my gardening education endeavors in the Juneau School District and then the summer camps. And I'm also working on the board of the Juneau Community Garden, where I have the charity plots under my coordination, and I work on the compost project out there. So that's a little bit about me and what I do here in Juneau in the garden scene.
Well, that's awesome. Let's talk a little bit about companion planting. I personally first learned about this concept when reading the book Braiding Sweetgrass by Robin Wall Kimmerer. And she talks about the three sisters, which are beans, squash, and corn. Could you give me some examples of companion planting combinations or techniques that maybe you've utilized?
Yeah. Well, I haven't done the corn so much in the method that I use because of the height of the plant. I do use zucchini, like a squash variety. Very often in my gardens, and I make little like hoop houses, mini hoop houses, about 3 and 4 feet tall, to shield them from some of the rain and the colder weather that we have here in Juneau. And I like to grow them with like brassica family plants or fast growing plants like lettuce, and then because the zucchini will just fill in a whole 4 foot wide bed each plant, and so you can plant faster growing plants on the outside and be able to crop those before the zucchini spreads in and takes over. So for the home gardener, it's a great way to utilize a small space and get maximum yield. Yeah, I mean, the techniques I use to warm up the squash, because squash and zucchini really like warm weather. And we struggle with that, especially this spring. We've struggled. I mean, we had an early start, but it definitely cooled off and started raining. So most of what I do to warm the soil is keep it dry, which is done in a number of ways. One, you can make a raised bed. Two, I'll cover it with a green plastic mulch, or another name for it is IRT. It's just a plastic film that allows a lot of warmth through the sun, but reflects the wavelengths that weeds need to grow. So it can do two things for you: just slow down the weeds and warm your soil and keep it drier. It allows you to kind of control the environment a little bit better. Over top of that, I'll make a hoop house, sometimes out of bent metal conduit or sometimes out of PVC pipes. And then over top of that, I will add what we call row cover, which is it's kind of like a white fleece. Maybe you've heard of it as Remay. That's kind of one of the first companies that made it. You just get this row cover and put it all the way over your crops, and that'll do two things. One, it'll warm it a little bit. It'll keep some of the rain. It sheds some of the rain off, not all of it, but it allows some. And then it also keeps the insects from coming into your brassica family plants, like your cabbage and your kale that I plant companion with the zucchinis. So it gives you a couple of things there. And then maybe later in June or July, I'll take the cover off and crop all the brassica family plants and let the squash really fill in.
When you're sowing these starts, how close are you planting them together? Is there a general rule of thumb for you that you use, or is it just kind of a feeling thing?
Yeah. So on my farm, some of the stuff I do is in 30-inch wide beds, because there's a lot of good tools that work at that width. But when I'm making these hoop houses and growing zucchini, I prefer a 4 foot wide bed. Then you can do one zucchini every 3 feet along that, right down the middle. And then you can do a row on each side of it, about 12 inches apart, sometimes 8, depending on what plant you're planting. Some of the lettuces can get closer. Certain kinds of bok choy can grow closer together. If you're trying to do a fast growing cabbage, you may want to give them a foot. Kale, if you're doing a big red Russian kale, you may want to give those every 18 inches. Gives you a decent crop. I've already cropped bok choy back in May that I started indoors. And then I've replanted another row of bok choy, just added some compost and kept growing. So now that'll be cropped in late June. And the zucchini went in with this cold May only about 7 to 10 days ago, and it's starting to take off.
From Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juneau with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years, with cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juneau. More at heritagecoffee.com.
Yeah,
You're listening to Juno Afternoon from Studio 2K at KTOO. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. And now it's time for our regular check-in with the Juno Police Department. And I'm joined in Studio 2K, dedicated to Carolyn Hobbs Peterson, Chief Derek Boss, and newly promoted Commander of Special Operations, Matt Dubois. Gonna cheese for you all being here today. Thank you so much. Wasiti, how's it going?
It's going great. Thank you for having us.
Yeah. So, Matt, this new position, Commander of Special Operations, that sounds important.
It's very important.
Yeah. What do you do?
I oversee the Criminal Investigations Unit along with the Drug Enforcement Unit of the Juvenile Police Department. And then part of that position also is the Initiative Commander over CCAD, Southeast Cities Against Drugs for the Southeast, and supervise that. And I'm also in that position I'm in as well right now, also overseeing the crisis negotiation team.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And also helping our team leader with J-MART, it's the Juno Motor Vehicle Accident Reconstruction Team. You may have seen them out there on Egan on the big crashes with all their equipment, redoing that up and so helping out over with that team, and then also starting to help out with our newly developed drone team that we're implementing within our department.
A drone team? What's that going to be doing?
It's going to help with our special ops with the SWAT and CNT.
Yeah.
And then also, which I was talking to the chief about on the way down here, pretty excited about the capabilities of doing search and rescues with it and helping out in that field.
Oh, that would be awesome. So is there certain like officers who are getting trained to run the drone, or how is that working?
That's correct. So yeah. We have, I believe it's 5 pilots. And of course, going through all the training for that, I believe the title is a 107 license that through the FAA that they have to acquire to be able to operate the drones. So lots of training, lots of flight time. So I'm pretty excited and seeing what that can do and how that can benefit our department and our community.
Absolutely. And you said J-MART. Describe that a little bit more for me.
J-MART's the Juno. It's our Juno Motor Vehicle Accident Reconstruction Team. And so they have equipment to go out there and basically reconstruct an accident to give a 3D view of what happened, measurements and stuff. So long time ago in policing, which I was taught at the academy, we would do measurements and stuff, and everything was reconstructed by measurements of where maybe a tire was on the road or, a bumper. But now we have this equipment that kind of does all that for us in faster time and more accurate. And it's also, it's good for presentations as far as, demonstrating, what happened and can help indicate with speeds and all that stuff.
Like in court or in a mm-hmm. report or something like that. Correct. So it's like a computer modeled version of it, right? Is it taking that data and like making, we've seen some of those things before, maybe in shows or whatever, where it's like Correct. They're recreating it. And that's cool. So you're still measuring it out, but the computer is aiding you in then recreating that and making it look like we can get a sense of what happened.
Sure, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. In essence, yep. And you can do like a fly through the scene at different areas, different views. One of the things that I was shown by the team that's pretty cool is, if you have a witness is like, I witnessed this accident from this area, then you can kind of get the equipment over there. So you can actually then later, recreate that and see like what they could have saw or what they couldn't have seen.
Oh, that's so cool. So, wow. Yeah, because then there was a tree in the way, or there was some Correct. Blockage that they couldn't have actually seen maybe one element of that. That is so cool. And what were you doing before you were promoted to commander?
So prior to that, I was the sergeant in Criminal Investigations Unit. So I oversaw the detectives in the Major Crimes Unit, essentially.
Okay.
Just kind of more familiar terminology for some folks.
Right.
That was also included 2 of our civilian investigators.
I see. Because I know we've read a lot recently over the last couple of years about the drug task force, sort of the idea of, and that's not just working with JPD, that's also like a statewide thing, right? You're all working together to sort of try to get as much of that stuff off the streets as possible.
Correct. It's about working together in essentially a task force. Basically sharing information and, interrupting those sales.
Yeah, because I think, I mean, one of I read recently was, you know, the bright folks who think they can get on a plane with, you know, hundreds of pills or whatever it is, you know, that getting right. all that stuff off the street. Well, it sounds like it's a great position for you. It sounds like it's are you excited by this opportunity?
I am. I'm excited to, you know, have an opportunity to be in this in a leadership role and helping the future of our department. And I was a local kid, you know, I was interested in police work since I was 14 years old.
Oh, wow.
And I was on the Juno crime line prior to being an officer, and also the Juno Citizens Patrol, which is affiliate with us and helping training them. And they help on the 4th of July and stuff like that. And so it's just an awesome opportunity to be in and to help going forward with our department. And
that's great.
I'm excited. Well,
congrats. He's being really humble, right?
Yeah, I can tell. Yeah, I think we can hear it in the voice. I mean, but congratulations, Matt. Really, that's really awesome. I think I should be calling you Commander, actually, I suppose.
Matt works.
Yeah. So, Chief, let's talk a little bit about, you know, other stuff going on with the department real quick. We always like to get sort of a recruitment update. We're still looking for police officers at joinjpd.com,
yes,
right?
We are.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Okay. And I'm assuming that the incentive is still in play.
It is. Yeah. We still have the $30,000 hiring bonus for officers. I'm very excited. We just had a new guy start on Monday of this week, Anthony Miner from Birmingham, Alabama.
Oh, nice.
So huge transition from
That's a big one.
Hot, humid, deep south up to here to Juneau. And he already loves it. So it's been great to have him. A great officer, comes with quite a bit of experience. And so great addition to our team.
That's great.
Got a couple more laterals coming on later this summer. And our comp center is doing really well with staffing. So
And that's the thing I always want to mention too, is that it's not just police officers that you're always leading. You're looking for other folks too, in the communications command center, all that kind of thing. And so all the positions are listed at joinjpd.com.
Yes.
And how's the canine? How's the canine unit? Wasn't there a new pup coming in?
We have a new pup. Yes. Yeah. He's up and running.
What's his name again? Do you remember? Do you guys know the name?
Dax.
Yeah, Dax. That is such a great name for a police dog, especially. I think that's so good.
It is.
Because I think it was last year, maybe. It was when they were telling us about, you know, that he was just a puppy. He was going through the training and stuff like that. But is he on the job?
He is on the job.
And
training takes a long time. So
we're
through training. Obviously, there's advanced stuff and annual certifications that we have to do. But
yeah.
He's up and running and in great shape and happy to have him.
That's so cool. I just had the first experience with the TSA dog in the airport. I hadn't seen that before. And I recently flew and this dog was just, you know, going through where you're sitting and smelling everybody's bags. I was just like, whoa, pretty serious stuff. Okay. And then the last thing I wanted to mention was that 4th of July, big holiday coming up.
Yes, it is.
Just give us a reminder a little bit about safety and fireworks and all that and what's allowed, what's not allowed. I'd just like to get a little refresher for everyone.
Yeah, I think even before I get into safety, I would just throw out a request to be courteous and polite to your neighbors. If you start there, that's the best starting point for all of it.
Yeah.
You know, if your neighbors have young kids, maybe midnight's not the right time to be shooting off fireworks.
Right, right.
We're all happy. We're all celebrating, but that courtesy goes a long, long way. You know, safety, don't launch them from your hands. That's a great starting place too. Set them on the ground.
You don't want to end up in the hospital.
And don't point or aim fireworks at things or people. Cars, houses, all that is off limits. Up in the air is all we ask.
Yeah, that's absolutely right.
Keep it safe. So.
Yeah. And it's always a busy day on the 4th. And of course, you know, if you're having a beverage or two, make sure that you're not the one holding the keys to the car.
Please don't drink and drive. Yeah. Find a DD. That's what we want.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's great. Really, congratulations again, Commander. And it's awesome. It's like a video game. I want to say Commander, you know, like, you know, it's like it's Commander Dubois. It's you know, so cool.
That JMART stuff is just like a video game when you sit there and watch it.
I bet. It's like so cool. The technology that y'all have access to from, like, let's say what you were in the academy, as you were saying, Matt, just right. So different, right? Like, and it just exponentially changes every year to get better yes. And better and better. Yes. I feel like AI, that's one place where I do think AI can be helpful is in sort of recreating accidents and things like that.
And we're still learning as an industry the AI integration with law enforcement.
Yeah.
You know, the possibilities are exciting, but we're still learning.
Just don't let it write your press releases. Right. That's all.
We're not there yet.
Yeah, yeah. All right. Well, Gunnath Cheech for coming in today. It's the Juneau Police Department. You can find out more at juneau.org/police, or you can also learn about the recruitment efforts at joinjpd.com. Thank you both for coming in today. Gunnath Cheech.
Thank you.
Up next, The Fool's Run. You know it, you love it. It's back with a new name and a new time. It's all happening tomorrow night. And we'll chat with the organizers next here on Juneau Afternoon from KTOO. But first, a savory moment.
Step in to the savory moment. You've heard of slow food, but what about slow fish? If this movement isn't on your radar, grab a pencil and paper and settle in for Slow Fish 101. A sister campaign to Slow Food, Slow Fish is an international effort that brings seafood lovers together in locations around the globe to learn about, celebrate, and eat fish. Can anyone tell me the three tenets of Slow Fish? That's correct. Good, clean, and fair. Let's break this down. Good means wholesome, seasonal, local, fresh, and delicious. Slow Fish hosts events where tasty, local seafood is prepared by expert chefs and shared with the public. Clean. This means preserving biodiversity, sustaining the environment, and nourishing a healthy lifestyle for both humans and animals. In Alaska, this is achieved by the efforts of nonprofit fisheries organizations, conservation groups, and government entities like the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. Finally, slow fish is fair fish. This means recognizing the work of harvesters, processors, and cooks, plus honoring cultural diversity and ensuring that seafood is accessible to all. Alaska, I think we got this. We have about 30 seconds for questions. You over there in the Grundens, do we have a slow fish chapter in Alaska? Great question. We don't actually, maybe because good, clean, and fair seafood just comes naturally here. But if you'd like to start a local chapter anyway, visit slowfoodusa.org/slow-fish. Okay, class, bottom line, support local harvesters or go fishing yourself and cook with love, slowly. Find more information on the Slow Fish movement, plus lots of recipes for cooking your own slow fish at savorymoment.org. From the studios of KCAW in Sitka, Alaska, I'm Beth Short Rhodes. Whatever is on your dinner table tonight, may you savor the moment.
You're listening to Community Supported Juneau Afternoon on KTOO 104.3 Juneau, 91.7 Juneau Auk Bay, and online at ktoo.org. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. It's been a couple years, but the Fool's Run is back. A new time, and hence a new name. But it's back, none the same. I hope Carl appreciated my little rhyme there.
I did.
And here to tell us all about it in the studio are Abby John and Carl Broderson. Gunnath Cheech, Haye Adi, thank you so much. It's a pleasure to have you both here. Wasiiti, how's it going?
Wonderful, thank you.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
Of course. Abby, this thing's happening tomorrow night.
It sure is. 9 p.m. start.
9 p.m. start. And that's the big change, right? Because it used to be called Only Fools Run at Midnight, but now it's called Only Fools Run at Night. And why the change to 9 p.m.?
So we wanted to shift the time. So it was, we just had a little bit of daylight, you know, we have that nice sunset on solstice, and then also make it a little more family friendly. So we can have, you know, kids and teenagers come out and do the race as well.
I see. So less tantrums happening at 12:30 after the kids should be in bed and their mom's making them run and dad's saying no and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, I get it. I get it. That makes sense. And it is, we've had, been having lovely sunsets recently. So it seems like it could be, is the weather predicted to be good tomorrow night?
It's trending towards improvement. We'll see what happens.
Really, why talk about the weather? It'll be what it'll be.
It'll be what it will be. Okay. Now, this Fool's Run at night, or when it was previously called Fool's Run at midnight, it has been sort of under the umbrella of various organizations. At one point, it was KTOO had it for a year or two.
That was a good year.
Clinkett and Haida had it for a year or two. There was people before that who had it. I think Sail, was it Sail that used to have it? Mm-hmm. Yeah, Sail, it used to be a Sail fundraiser. What is it now?
So we are running this in partnership with Juneau Trail and Roadrunners, and it's to benefit the high school cross country team.
Okay, so that's a good cause, I feel like.
Especially for a running event.
Yeah, a running event to be supporting our now one high school cross country team, right? Mm-hmm. So that's cool. Okay. So, and it is, wait, what? It's 40th annual?
Depending on how you do the math and whether or not we count the pandemic years that may or may not have been skipped. Yeah, this is the 40th annual.
What?
I know.
I thought it was like 13 years old or something like that. It's really been that long.
It goes all the way back. I found Alan Edwards, who was one of, I believe, the founder of the event back with the Juneau Fire Department, and talked with him about it. And he ran it for 10 years and he started back in 85.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is 85 was 40 years. Oh, let's not get started on that.
Yeah, let's not. No, we're, it's okay.
Okay, Abby, give us a couple of details on what is the race. Like, is it, it's a 5K, it's a one, what is it?
So we are, first of all, we're starting and finishing at Centennial Hall.
Great.
Our classic location, starting at 7 p.m., you can come and do in-day or same-day registration, and you can register for the 1 mile or the 5K. Starting at 8:15, we're going to do acknowledgments and we've got a guest speaker. And then at 8:30 sharp, our costume contest starts. And so we've got just a slew of amazing prizes this year donated by some of our, you know, local businesses. And anybody can come up on stage and enter the costume contest. And then starting at 9 p.m., both the 5K and the 1 mile will begin. And it's the course that goes, you know, you take a left out of Bullwinkle, you go on Willoughby and right on Capitol, and you kind of run up through neighborhoods and then you're out on Glacier Highway and then you come back on Glacier Highway and finish at Centennial Hall.
I see. I like that there's a shorter option as well. So there's the 1 mile option, which still gets you involved, but you don't have to run the whole 5K. Or if you've got little kids, let's say, and you wanted to have them be a part of that, right? That's really kind of cool. And you're listed as a coach, Abby. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct.
What is that role as a coach?
So I coach I'm one of the coaches for the high school cross country team. But my involvement with the Only Fools Run is as one of the race directors.
Okay. I see. Okay. And I know your co-coach, John Stearns, couldn't make it today. And then what is your role in this, Carl?
I attached myself to this program without really asking anyone after seeing it on the Juneau Trail and Roadrunners website and writing a blind email saying, hey, could I help? This program is really important to me and I will do anything to help it succeed.
Carl, you do so many things. I'm not surprised to see you here on this particular event as well. Had you participated in it for years too?
For years and years. This is one of my favorite annual events and I was heartbroken when it started to disappear and have been very appreciative of Abby's patience while I come and tell her how things used to be 10 years ago, which is everybody's favorite conversation to have. Thank you very much.
It's a new day. It's a new day. Because we missed, how many years did we miss with the pandemic? Was it 3 or 4? Has it been 4?
I keep trying to figure this out. I mean, it was an Equinox run for its very last iteration. And then I think for a couple of years, it didn't happen. I went out there with some friends in my pandemic bubble and ran it on Solstice, just kind of out of spite, honestly, just to make sure that it would still happen. But yeah, it's been several years since this last happened.
Well, it's really cool that it's happening again. And so let's talk a little bit about this costume contest. What are we looking for people to wear? Like, is there a theme?
The tradition is the centipede costumes. We don't actually dress up like a great big bug, but the idea is to have group costumes where you've kind of tied yourselves together in some fashion. And the best example of this I can think of is in 2008 when we had the avalanche across the power transmission lines. One group dressed up as power line towers, so they're all held together with their, you know, pretend electrical lines, and they were chased by an avalanche the entire way around the course. That is a fantastic centipede costume idea, but it doesn't have to be that elaborate. Plenty of people will just put on a neon tutu and show up and have a great time.
Wow. That is pretty wild. That sounds like a lot of fun. You know, and it's funny because I've had some runners in here before, Mary Ellison, people like that. And y'all are nuts.
It's true.
So it's a great event. I do remember hearing about it when I first moved to Juneau, you know, 15 years ago or whatever it is now. And it's such a wonderful event. And you're going to win the grand prize is a certificate for two to Tracy Arm from Allen Marine.
Yes.
That's really cool. I want to shout out some of your other sponsors, ALMP, Foodland, Juneau Greens, MRV Architects, Nugget Alaskan Outfitter, Pavitt Health and Fitness, and is it Hollitz?
Hollitz Engineering. Hollitz
Engineering.
Great engineering firm.
And of course, this is put on by the Juneau Trail and Road Runners. And it says you have JPD listed here. Are they helping out in terms of just like traffic and stuff, or what's that?
Yes, there's a road closure involved.
Yeah.
And so this is another thing that makes it easier to do it at 9 p.m. than midnight, is that you can get overtime and staff to go and do that much more easily at 9 o'clock, I think.
Yeah, right. And Abby, this is probably, as you're saying, as a race director, like how many hours have you put into this thing?
So I think, you know, the first year race directing with an event of this size, it takes maybe a little more time than
sure.
it would, you know, in the second or third or fourth year. But thankfully, I had a lot of great resources. Carl has been amazing. And Tristan Knutson-Lombardo, who also used to run the event with Sail for years. He's been a really great resource. And then all the other co-coaches for cross country. So Zach Purcell and Kristen Wells and Kent Meerig as well have been super helpful in planning this event.
That is so cool. It's the Only Fools Run at Night. It's at 9 p.m. tomorrow. You can register there starting at what time?
7 p.m. at Centennial Hall.
Okay. If you want to pre-register, can you pre-register?
You can pre-register until 6 p.m. tonight.
Oh, until 6 p.m. today, which is Thursday, June 20th. If you're hearing this on the repeat tonight, you're not going to register tonight. You're going to register tomorrow at the race. But it's 9 p.m. You're going to start at Centennial Hall. It's a fundraiser for the high school cross country team. It sounds really fun. It's a great thing. I'm really glad to see that it's back in Juneau. And we'll see some pictures on social media hopefully soon.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, absolutely. Carl, Abby, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you.
Gwyneth, sheesh. KTOO would like to acknowledge that we broadcast from the homelands of the Occoquan. The Clan Edie have stewarded this area for thousands of years. Today, our studios sit on a spot once part of the tidelands, now covered over with buildings, roads, and parking lots. We recognize those families who traveled to and from these tidelands to fishing and hunting grounds and to gatherings in other villages and still cherish it as an important part of their way of life for today and for future generations. Tomorrow's show, a sneak peek at Perseverance Theater's Summer Star program, plus a conversation about tourism and its lasting impacts, and a look at the latest releases from the Buddy Tabor Project. Juneau Afternoon airs Wednesday through Friday at 3 p.m. on our summer schedule here on KTOO Juneau 104.3 and KAUK Juneau Auk Bay 91.7. Hello, out the road. Find the show online at ktoo.org/JuneauAfternoon. Theme music is by Indian Agent. I'm Boston Christopher, producer and host of the program, with help today from Aaron Tripp. Thanks, and have a glorious Juneau evening.